All right, good morning, everyone. This is Brandon with the Iowa Healthcare Association, joined by our representatives from Amerigroup Iowa on our March 9th, 2022 MCL call, sponsored by Right Dose Pharmacy. Right Dose Pharmacy has been an awesome partner of Iowa Healthcare Association for the last several years. We look forward to continuing to work with them, especially as they sponsor our MCO calls for 2022. So thanks to Right Dose Pharmacy for the sponsorship. We'll start here like we normally do, running through some informational letters. I did this on our previous call. We'll do it here quickly as well. You know, a couple that I wanted to talk about here are, one is, it was actually released, I think, last week, and it's the Skilled Nursing Facility Iowa Health and Wellness Plan. I'll call it benefit expansion, I suppose, is maybe what we'll refer to it as. And basically what it's doing is it's for those individuals who are medically exempt on the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan, they would be eligible for services beyond the typical 120 skilled days a year that are our current benefits for Iowa Health and Wellness Plan members. This would allow for those medically exempt individuals on Iowa Health and Wellness Plan to have some access to custodial or routine nursing facility stay days following their skilled stay. And so, again, that's info letter 2318, which will provide you a little bit more information. We do know that the department is also working on a frequently asked questions document. And if I'm remembering correctly, I think that the MCOs have been talking with providers a little bit about this program over the last several months while this info letter has been in development. And so I think the IL kind of lends to the or backs up what we've been hearing, what providers have been hearing from the MCO partners, that this benefit is available for those medically exempt individuals. So I just wanted to point that info letter out, 2318. One that also came out today is IL 2322, which is Iowa Medicaid Provider Quarterly Training on Program Integrity and Payment Error Rate Measurement. So if those educational sessions, those quarterly trainings are March 29th, 30th, and 31st. And so if that's a training you would like to participate in, you only need to register for one. If it is a training that you think would be beneficial to you, that is messaged out to all Medicaid providers. So it's something you'd be able to participate in. Another one I want to talk about is the HCBS ARPA Recruitment and Retention Grants. Those retention grants, providers were able to apply for those through, I think, the middle of February, and that was funding that would go to waiver providers who, based off of the number of employees that you currently have and that you openings that you have to help to recruit and retain employees, that grant needed approval from CMS prior to distribution of money. And so there was an IL 2319 that came out at the end of February, basically saying we're still waiting for CMS approval. Once we get that, we will be able to distribute funds because the initial time frame for fund distribution had been end of February. And so once they receive that approval from CMS, they'll be able to distribute those funds to you all that applied, I suppose I should say. There was also another one that came out yesterday, IL 2321, which is 2022 revised guidance for CMP grants for in-person visitation aids during the COVID-19 public health emergency. And so what that is, I know we had CMP grant funds available to providers earlier on in the pandemic for some visitation aids. This kind of reopens that process and expands it to include, well, it's based off of that most recent CMS memo or FAQs that were released in February, I suppose I should say. But what it does is it opens up to the ability to purchase portable fans and portable room air cleaners with the high efficiency particulate air filters. Basically, so it's opening it up to a few additional items for providers to be able to apply for CMP funds to help with some infection control practices. And there's an application there within that IL that you would be able to apply for those additional CMP grant funds for that purpose. I think that kind of covers it as far as information letters that I wanted to cover here this morning. John, I'll pause here and see if you have any comments you want to make on behalf of Amerigroup.
Yeah, I think your setup of ILs, goes directly to our, our reminder that COVID still is sort of the dominant framework in which healthcare is being provided today, and that affects Amerigroup's ability to manage the Medicaid population. The state plan amendments that were approved in 2020 are still in effect, and despite the governor's end of the state's proclamation, the federal proclamation, public health proclamation stays in effect. And, we don't have a date certain at which that may change. So we're still operating within those state plan amendment guidelines. And, I don't know that we have any other new big updates coming out of Amerigroup today. But I will turn it to the rest of our team to see if, Sheree or Donna or Angela in particular, if you've got any updates you want to share with the group today.
John, this is Sheree. I don't have any updates specifically. I would just remind everyone that, if you, we do have links on all of our emails, and we could put the link in the chat so that providers can connect and get signed up so that they can receive email versions of all of our notifications, newsletters, and so on. So that's a kind of a newer feature that we have is that sign up process, so that all that information, instead of just being on the website, can be forwarded to providers. So I think that's a helpful tool. But outside of that, I don't have any other updates.
That's an awesome suggestion. Thanks, Sheree.
All right. Oh, yeah. Donna, I saw unmuted herself.
I don't have a real update per se. It's something that we'll probably talk about later on. But whereas from the LTSS world, we don't have anything specific for LTSS.
All right. Thanks, Donna. All right. We'll just go into questions if that's all right, and see if we can plug through these. So the first one that we had two submitted ahead of time. I do see we have another one in the chat here. So as you have questions, feel free to put those questions into the chat, and we can make sure that we get to those. The first question I have is actually related to the question that's in the chat. So this may be kind of formed as a two-parter here, but it's regarding the HIPS codes. And this is for claims that are denying for a provider when the tenant or the resident has the AmeriVantage health plan, and those claims in this case should be going straight to Amerigroup for the Medicaid processing, since the members are not homebound. We've always been working on this and talking about this for the last several months about trying to get those claims to process properly, because they should not need those codes because they are Medicaid claims. They just happen to have AmeriVantage. Do you have any update or any thoughts on what we should do? Because this provider is now running up on a timely filing issue in this particular case on how they can go about getting the claims processed for those situations. And just, I guess, for additional context, they'd stated that they'd worked with Ben in provider experience, and then with Patty as well. And so haven't been getting a lot of insight as to how to get those claims to process properly. And so
I'll jump in and start and have, you know, maybe Sheree or Megan come up behind me and fill in some details. But yeah, first of all, for the provider in question, you know, definitely be working with Ben directly on claims level examples so that he can work that through. You know, we are working on an update. What we're doing proactively is we're pulling these claims at least manually into our system and issuing workarounds until the total problem is resolved. And we're looking at an IT solution currently at April 16th. And I'll pause there and see if Sheree or any other provider experience team members want to chime in.
John, this is Sheree. I don't really have anything to add to that. As long as there's a project, we try to reprocess claims within the project. Don't end up with duplications. That can also be a problem. As we get more updates, we can bring it back to this group.
All right, thank you both. And then the second part, which I don't think it was initially a second part, but I see that there's a question in the chat related to AmeriVantage. And this is, when a patient has the AmeriVantage dual coverage, just want to verify that when the patient is homebound, we would use the Medicare Advantage portion, but would Amerigroup Medicaid still be used for non-homebound patients, and would you still require authorization? I guess my initial read on this is, if the person is requiring Medicaid services, that would typically require an authorization.
Yep.
Those services would still require an authorization. I guess the exception may be home health aid visits, since those services currently with Amerigroup do not require an auth. Those services would not be, but yeah, go ahead, John.
Yep, you're right, and you know we're in group chat to try to figure out who's going to respond, and I will start and see. Yeah. It, once they flip over to the Medicaid benefit, the same PA requirements for Medicaid apply, and you just noted the exception, so I think we've covered it. If not, you know, folks can ask follow up.
Awesome. And then I know, at least with that specific question, they've been trying to work with Sheree. And so, Sheree, if you have any thoughts, or maybe you've already wrote back or addressed this with Karen here, but they're just asking to see that you've actually been able to receive their messages. And you obviously don't need to reply on here, but if you could follow up with her, if you have been, that would be great. And if not, maybe a comment to Karen here, or if you have anything you want to share with Sheree, go ahead.
Sure, Brandon, I would. I do have emails from Karen, and I do want to apologize if you tried to call me. My phone is being replaced, and I have been up without a phone for the last couple of weeks. So I'm just waiting for a new phone to come. So if you have missed any communications from that route, I apologize, but it's outside of my control. But I do have your emails, and I will follow up on those. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Sheree. One question, another follow-up, I suppose, on the AmeriVantage and the comments about a project. How would a provider go about finding out if their claims were included in that HIPS project?
Megan, they can reach out to their rep and we can look it up for them. I know Ben had a provider reach out yesterday. I'm not sure if they're on the call or not, but he was able to check, and he should be getting back to that provider today, because we did find that they were being reprocessed in this project.
Awesome. And then is there someone that they could go to if maybe they haven't been able to get in contact, especially it sounds like with this initial question, there was kind of a time crunch that they could go to just to verify that their claims are indeed in the project, so that way they can kind of rest a little bit easier knowing that they're included.
You mean other than their provider rep?
Correct.
Yeah, if they're not getting a response, they can email me. That's fine. I'll put my email in the chat.
Awesome. Thanks, Megan.
Yep.
So does, well, there might be another question. So if you're using the Medicaid portion of AmeriVantage, we wouldn't need a HIPS code, correct? I think that is the fix that's possibly going into place. Is that what I'm understanding with this? And
That's not something I can reply to without any certainty, without checking in with our ops people, and just double check with our provider experience reps to see if they've been communicated any specifics about what the project is.
Peyton, I know you're on. Is that what your understanding is? I know you've been working on this for a little while on your side. Is that kind of the same interpretation that you're having with this?
This is Peyton. I'm sorry, my understanding, could you repeat it again?
Yeah, so if you're using the Medicaid portion of AmeriVantage, we wouldn't need a HIPS code. That's kind of the whole.
Correct, because yeah, if the member is just covered under AmeriGroup, then they shouldn't be homebound, and so we shouldn't have to even submit it to the Medicare side of it. And so I know there's been discussion before, but either including the XB not homebound in the remarks or using that diagnosis code to indicate that they're not supposed to be billed to the Medicare side, it should bypass all of that.
Awesome. And just to clarify, Peyton is not with AmeriGroup. Peyton is another provider that I know has been working on this issue for a little while now. So
Brandon, this is Dawn Hobson, provider experience. I just want to clarify that the XB is not accepted any longer. In order for the claim hopefully to get crossed over to Medicaid as a not homebound, they do need to have that diagnosis code of Z76.89.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I typically put both on my claims just to try to bypass issues and hopefully get around this issue right now.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Don. The Z code is the method, I suppose, the official method for bypassing those denials. So I'm going to flip to the second question that we had submitted ahead of time before flipping into the chat again. we had a question brought up about a new prior authorization that is faxed out to providers when it's approved. From my understanding, it sounds like this may be recently changed, and just wanted to see if anyone from AmeriGroup wanted to maybe address, you know, what we're trying to accomplish with the change and what it's hopefully trying to improve, and I guess any comments, and if that's accurate, I suppose, that a new approval auth is being faxed out.
There, I'm off mute. Donna's got an unstable connection, so she's been in and out of this, and she provided me with a little bit of background on this prior to the meeting today. And if she's on, she can fill in the details that I might have missed. But yeah, there has been a change, and the change is, let's see, I'm trying to get over to my notes here. All right. Donna did unmute, and she's joined us by her phone. She indicates that the February 14th, we migrated to a new authorization system, and the new fax has more detail than the previous one did, and most of the fields are auto-populated. She also reports that the LTSS UM team continues to provide fax notifications for approvals, denials, and peer-to-peer overturns, while the physical health team sends fax notifications for denials and peer-to-peer overturns. So, Donna, if you're still unmuted, go ahead and chime in if you can provide additional detail.
Donna, if you're talking, we are unable to hear you.
Oh.
Sounds like she may still be having some connection issues.
I'm trying to unmute, but it won't work.
Oh, there we go. We can hear you.
Yeah.
Oh, you got me? Okay. So I think I'm double muted or whatever. So anyway, so we migrated to this new authorization system that we've been actually trying to migrate to for quite a while. And so we migrated on 214. So with the new system, it allows us to hopefully improve some of our efficiencies. And one of those is being able to fax right out of the system with less manual faxing and manual entry. So a lot of that information is now just auto-populated. So the goal would be to reduce some of those common data entry errors as well. In addition to, you know, faxes going to the wrong places or, you know, just speeding up the fax delivery notification as well. So the LTSS team has always maintained that we need to, because of the nature of our authorizations and how the work happens with LTSS, that we need to provide fax notification to our providers. So we're faxing out of that system while the physical health team is still using, they're only faxing for the denials and those peer-to-peer overturns. So that's kind of the difference there. But so it's a little bit of a change. I'm hoping that the information actually is more detailed and a little bit more clear.
Awesome. Thank you very much for the update. I'm going to flip over to the chat again. I see a question from Jan here. Jan would be assisted living. They had missed the authorization or never received the authorization on one of their tenants. And they've sent some messages to their case manager and an individual named Lisa. How can they or can Jan find out how to find an authorization for a person that has been approved? Is there a way for them to look that up?
They should be able to look that up in the portal, but if they're missing an authorization and they've reached out to their case manager not having any luck, and if I'm not sure if they've reached out to the CBCM's regional manager, but you can also send me an email and I can look into it and see what's going on as well. My email is Donna, D-O-N-N-A, period, W-E-N-D-T. @amerigroup.com.
All right. Yep. John and I are on the same page. Both just put it in the chat at the same time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Donna. All right. I do see we have some other questions that have been going on in the chat, and I see that Megan's been able to reply to several of them. So appreciate the responses through there, Megan. Janet's asking, is there a special code for Medicaid custodial claims for nursing facilities to use to bypass the claims being processed as Medicare? Janet, no, there is not. That there was one. The reason home health has one is because it was all prior to managed care. They had to have some way to indicate homebound status, which was the reason for those claims not being processed as Medicare. And so that had to connect. Unfortunately, continued and had to continue through into the managed care system. There is not something like that in place on the nursing facility side. All right. So this is another follow-up regarding AmeriVantage. Patients on AmeriVantage dual plan have an ID number for the Medicare portion. but they noticed a regular Amerigroup ID number for the Medicaid. So for non-homebound, we would use the regular Amerigroup ID that starts with a 7. Is that correct? And I assume when they say regular Amerigroup, they're referring to the Medicaid ID.
This is Sheree. If you, the number 7, the claim or the ID numbers that start with 7 are actually Amerigroup's member ID numbers. And so I don't know the answer to which number is should be used for this type of claim. Unless someone else knows, we can take that back and then get a response back. But the way this question is worded, the ID numbers that start with a 7 are the Amerigroup member ID numbers.
So another question, a follow-up on the prior authorization discussion that we had. Does this mean all approvals and denials for auth will be faxed to provider offices or facilities or agencies? Is that how that works?
That would only be for those LTSS members for the approvals.
Which would be waiver or... And facilities waiver. Don't require an auth, I suppose. So
correct. Right. Right. Yep. Okay. So for the HCBS services and for members who are in an HCBS plan type.
Okay. Thank you, Nona. And there was a question, which I know I see Megan has responded to Marilyn here, but it is something that I've heard several times. And so I'll read it or say it out loud, but we do have some providers who at times receive denials for services. And then as we are submitting the documentation to support why the service should be paid, it seems like, you know, requests for information are, they're requesting information that's already been submitted. And it feels like, what's being submitted isn't actually being looked at. And so, there are times where we're having to go through multiple levels, even though the proper documentation we feel has been submitted the first time or proving why funds shouldn't be recouped, I guess, is this case. And I know Megan mentions reaching out to your rep for them to be able to research it on their end if you've already completed your appeals. But I agree with Marilyn that it does. We have been hearing this, at least from an association standpoint, from providers about the recoupment process, the submissions of information, and decisions being upheld and having difficulties in being able to retain payments that were paid appropriately to begin with. So I don't know if there's anyone has any comments besides what Megan's suggestions were in the chat, but I'll pause if there is any.
Brandon, this is Megan again. So if any provider receives a recoupment notice, the letter with the project number ID, that's a little bit different. They definitely want to make sure they dispute it because we have seen a few invalid recoupments lately. So as long as you dispute it, it gets worked and the decision will be reversed and the payment either will not be taken or will be paid back if it was already taken out. So if it's a recoupment, there's a dispute process on the letter. It has a project number. If it's just a claims adjustment, that's when you want to do our payment appeals process. So they're kind of two different things. And the recoupments and the adjustments get a little bit confusing sometimes.
Okay. No, that makes sense. I think we, you know, as providers lump them together, which obviously is incorrect. Thanks for the clarification as to what should be done and when. And I guess as providers, just make sure that you're meeting those deadlines for the appeals or for the disputes. I would probably do them as quickly as you can rather than waiting until the end of the allotted time frame, just to ensure that it gives yourself plenty of time to follow up again if you are needing to. Marilyn, it sounds like you're having a double recoupment on claims. So, you know, that's a good question. She said that she's, you know, called the number on the letter, the recoupment letter, and that person isn't able to provide any information, which seems odd since that's the person that is supposedly assigned to that recoupment. Any thoughts on, I guess, how they should proceed if that's the case? And I know that's kind of a third party entity for you all, but just curious on your thoughts.
No, I get it. So if that happens, if they call that number and they aren't, you know, they don't get any information on the recoupment or what they're looking for, they can reach out to the rep and we can reach out internally. I do that a lot with my providers. I mean, the cost containment, the people that do the recoups, they do want the provider to dispute, but if you just have questions on it, you can send it to your rep and we can reach out and then we can, you know, come back to you and let you know, give you answers to any questions you had on the recoupment.
Awesome. Thanks, Megan. Okay. That is what I have in my email. And then I see we have another one that just came in through chat. How long does it take for them to respond when you dispute a recoupment? I faxed the dispute letter 2 months ago and haven't heard anything back. So I guess the question probably one is, do they or should a provider expect a response when they dispute a recoupment? And if so, how long should that recoupment or that response to that dispute take?
Yes, they should expect a response. I don't know their time frame right now. So again, that's something we can reach out and I can see if I can get the answer right now. So just give me a few minutes and I will see what the time frame is on that.
Okay. Thanks, Megan. And I do remember, I mean, to go along the lines of Jen's question here, I do remember as we were, I don't know, it must have been the end of 21, it seemed like there were several recoupment projects going along or going out to providers. And so that was one of the comments that I got was, you know, we've submitted disputes and we have no idea where it's even at in the process or if it was accepted or if it was denied. And so it almost seemed like they weren't getting a response at all. And so obviously a response is helpful for us to know what we need to do next. And rather than it being upheld, us not knowing, and then just having a period of time in the future where claims aren't paid because of a negative balance, I suppose, assigned to the provider's account. So, yeah, as you get follow-up information or information from the recruitment team, we'd appreciate that information. So I'll pause here, see if we have any other questions that want to come in or need to come in. Here's a question / suggestion, and it's that, is there any possibility that recoupment disputes and or overpayments can be as a web appeal so the provider has documentation that their responses have been received?
Brandon, this is Cherie, and on our Availity site, I believe that there is, and I will tell you this is new. This is new information to all of us also, but I believe that there is a mechanism on there now that you can do your recoupment disputes through our ability system. If you do not find that that button is there, and I apologize because I did not research this before coming to this call, that means it's still coming and we just don't have it yet in Iowa. So it may be there, but if not, it'll be there soon that you will be able to do recoupments through Ability. However, on the other piece where they're talking about, like doing a payback or scheduling an offset, we have forms for that are on our website, and they can submit those forms, and they're submitted by fax. And I do not know of a plan at this point that scheduling an offset or, arranging for a payback can be done through the Ability system.
All right. Thanks, Sheree. I see Megan said that she's waiting for a response on the recoupment timeframe. So we'll get that from Megan as soon as she hears back from them. So, excuse me. Seeing no further questions in the chat or in my email, I think we'll be able to wrap up this month's call a little bit early. So with that, as always, as you have questions, feel free to send them my way. We can make sure that we get them on future calls, as well as, just intermittent outreach, I suppose, as well through our partners at AmeriGroup. Yeah, go ahead, John.
Yeah, I just before we close out, I did want to note that we have proactive case management outreach to our members, particularly on the LTSS side of things, who reside within the path of the devastating storms that occurred here on Saturday. And I wanted to just offer, if you've got suggestions, if there are facilities or programs that were affected that would, clue us in on targeting our outreach, we would welcome that feedback.
Awesome. No, that's great. Thanks for putting that in here.
You bet.
All right. Well, again, thanks to our partners with AmeriGroup for joining us today and taking some of our questions. Also, shout out to Right Dose Pharmacy, our sponsor for our MCO calls for 2022, and appreciate their partnership as well. So with that, we'll wrap it up for this month. Thanks, everyone. And everyone, stay healthy, and hopefully spring comes soon. Have a good one.
Thank you.